Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for November 17th, 2013. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and joining him as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, good evening tonight. In about 30 minutes, Tom Jensen from Public Policy Poland is going to call in and talk to us about a lot of his polls. May have a guest here in the early half of the hour here any minute coming up because we've got a lot to talk about. They had a special election in Louisiana. We'll discuss that. Even though it's not Southern politics, can we avoid Rob Ford, Catherine? It's just too good.
Southern Canada politics.
Yeah, exactly right. Southern Canada. We'll talk about him, some new polls out of states like Kentucky. But the bombshell, we had a show last week, and we had a lot of topics to discuss, and a lot of stuff was going on politically, like Georgia having a new, or the Democratic Party having a new major league gubernatorial candidate. But I don't think we saw our first topic coming whatsoever. But Monday morning, the Atlanta Braves announced they were leaving Turner Field and leaving the city limits of Atlanta, leaving Fulton County for Cobb County. Now, if you're not familiar, this is the southernmost part of Cobb County. It's close to the Atlanta perimeter, but it's just kind of right over the border, if you will. So it's not like way, way out, but it's certainly in a different location because if you're not familiar with Atlanta, baseball has been played since it started in 1965, because they did play before the Braves came, always in this one location, essentially. Fulton County Stadium was built right across the street from where Turner Field is, so, you know, that's kind of the historic hub of professional sports in Atlanta, because both the Falcons and the Chiefs played there as well. I want to welcome our special guest for the first half of the hour. It's just like Southern Sports Universe. Welcome in, Mike Tierney.
Good evening, David.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, we're just kind of setting this show up. Catherine and I were kind of talking a little bit about it. But since you're our expert here, I mean, you've covered the Braves, the Falcons, the Olympics, all type of Southern, you know, sports venues and what have you. Did you see this thing coming before Monday?
Well, I did not see this coming, David. I don't know that anybody did, but in hindsight, it should not have been a surprise. Had we had a chance to look at all of the facts in the situation with the lease expiring and for what we know now about the short lifespan of stadiums and arenas, in hindsight, it probably shouldn't have been a surprise.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people weren't familiar with the lease when it was up. We've been so focused on the new dome, nobody thought about Turner Field. Because, honestly, I don't go to the Braves games a lot. I'm just not a real baseball guy. But I happened to go this past summer because my daughter was in the elementary choir singing the national anthem. And I went in the stadium, and the stadium was just in great condition. Obviously, there's not really a need for a new stadium, was there?
No, there wasn't, but more and more now, stadiums need to be elaborate, large sports bars, and that's what we're going to get with the Falcons' new stadium. That's not quite the same with baseball, but that's the direction that baseball stadiums are going to now. So you're right, it's a very comfortable, clean stadium. There weren't a lot of bells and whistles there, and owners are now looking for a lot of tooting in that regard, which is probably what we're going to get with the new Braves stadium.
Yes, well, I continue to have questions for you, Mike, but I want to be fair to Catherine. Let her jump in here and ask you a few.
Fire away.
Catherine?
Well, you know, I haven't been to the Braves Stadium in a long time, but I went there when it was before it was the Braves Stadium, when it was Olympic Stadium, and then I actually did go to the former Braves, where the whatever it was called, Fulton County. What was it called before?
Fulton County Stadium.
Fulton County.
Yeah. I saw a Olympic baseball game there, and then so I have some experience with Turner Field, and I mean, to me, it seems new. You know, I'm not a sports aficionado, so I don't think of things in the same time frame, I guess. But my question is more about the fan experience. It seems to me, just from reading about what they're going to be doing for this new stadium, and, you know, there's been tons of things written about it, and, you know, who knows how much of it is going to actually happen. But it seems to me that what they're basically doing is they're going to be building a gauntlet where, you know, fans are going to arrive at the stadium and walk about a half a mile, a quarter to a half a mile, through a gauntlet of, you know, bars, restaurants, merchandise, kiosks, before they even get into the stadium. So I'm just wondering, like, how is that the way it is at other baseball arena or baseball stadiums around the country? Is this sort of what we are coming to expect? Like, you don't just walk into the stadium and take your seat. You have to, you know, walk through a series of sort of gimmies as well.
I don't know that in other areas you're forced to walk through a gauntlet. I think you have that option at a lot of different places, especially the old town areas like Fenway Park in Boston and Wrigley Field in Chicago. There are many dining, entertainment, drinking options in those areas, plus souvenir shops. So I don't know that fans here will be forced to walk past.
Oh, it sounds like that's the way it's meant being designed.
Yeah, but there still may be some parking options closer to the stadium.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure that's been played out yet, but I think that is the part of the motivation for the Cobb folks in getting the team there, because you know, they're talking about this tax district where the stadium's going to be, where businesses are going to pay an increased tax. Hopefully, from their point of view, in exchange for the business that they can generate by that. So yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of retail. I think fans want the dining bar options. They probably don't want the shopping options, but they might have to maybe close their eyes or turn their head the other way as along their walk to the entry gate.
Yeah. Mike, I know Catherine may have some more questions, but one thing I think is kind of missed in this is obviously this is probably not a good thing for the city of Atlanta. It's probably a good thing for Cobb in the end, although there's some consternation about how the tax structure is, particularly compared to the Atlanta City deal for the new dome, which actually sounds favorable. But what I see as the biggest loser here is not the folks necessarily in the city who are going to have to go, you know, 12, 14 miles up the road. It's the folks in Clayton, Henry, Fayette, DeKalb, Rockdale County that are on the other side of Cobb County from Atlanta that now are probably adding about 20 minutes to their commute, making it a much – and then getting into a lot more traffic getting to this. And I know the Braves, you know, they like that heat map. And if you actually look at that heat map in Fayette County – you have a ton of Braves fans. That thing was solid red. What have the Braves said, if anything, about those counties on the southern and eastern side of the city?
Well, they haven't said anything, and as you point out, the heat map, that's what they allude to. They are saying that the bulk of their customer base is toward the northern arc, and that those people are going to have a shorter commute to the games. I mean, let's be honest, no matter where you put a ballpark or stadium in metro Atlanta, some folks are going to be inconvenienced. You know, you're not going to be able to please anybody there. I'm not taking a position on this. To me, what we need to look at is it's what, 12 to 14 miles up the road. It's not like it's in Canton or Douglasville or places like that. So, yeah, those folks are going to have a bit more of a commute, but other folks are going to be able to hop in their cars later than normal. So it's a trade-off that the Braves were willing to make. I think probably in their minds it was at worst a sort of a toss-up in the commute standpoint, and their thinking was that the business angle of this tilted it in favor of a move.
Yes. Now, Catherine, jump back in if you need to.
I think as far as the traffic and the commute and all that, I don't know if either of you ever, you know, go 75 north between 4 and 7 p.m. on a weeknight, but it's not fun now.
I go the other way a good bit, and I'm flying down the road going against traffic. Glad I'm not in the parking lot across the median, honestly, Catherine. So, yes, I have seen
it. Right, and I actually live in the Howell Mill 75 area, and the traffic is already terrible there. And I'm quite confident that that's going to be the route that Midtown people take to get to 75. It's already terrible from lunch hour on, really. So, I mean, I think, and you know, you hear the reports, and I'm going to say I'm not opposed to this either. I think that, you know, the Braves did what they felt like they had to do. Atlanta didn't respond in a way that satisfied them. Whether it was an appropriate response or not is, you know, not up to me to decide. But I don't criticize them for this decision. It just seems like it maybe wasn't as fully thought out, or there must be some information. But what I'm hoping is there's some information that we don't have yet about how they're going to handle traffic.
I'm not sure there is information. I think what situation is, they feel like they've got up to 3 years to come up with a plan, and that may be a needle in a haystack situation, certainly. I think this won't please everyone or satisfy everyone, but I think you're going to see shuttle buses running from all over Metro Atlanta with designated lanes to speed things up. Now, again, that may not be widely accepted because we love our cars here, but I think that's going to alleviate the problem to some extent. Now, I agree with you that commute is bad. I will say that coming down 75 late afternoon and early evening, which I don't do on a regular basis, but I've done it enough to know that you hit the downtown connector and it is brutal.
Yeah.
So I would say that the commute from the north side to downtown may not be as bad as 75 north during that time, but it's no walk in the park either. So I don't think we're going to a situation of an easy commute to a hard commute.
That's a good point.
I'm sorry. Yes. Well, Catherine, I'm sorry. Mike, talking about the stadium and it moving out, we know that Gwinnett for a while has tried to get in on some deals. They've built their own arena, which at times has housed different sports entities like the indoor football team, I think, currently plays there. They get some concerts. I think they've tried to flirt with the Falcons at one point. And then they worked a deal with the Braves to move the Richmond, Virginia franchise to Metro Atlanta, which seemed kind of strange when they initially did it because it was so close to the big stadium. But now Cobb gets the big team and Gwinnett stuck with this AAA team. One, how jealous and ticked off is Gwinnett? And kind of a sidebar question to that is, do they then have to look at moving this AAA team out of Gwinnett because they now would have two teams on the north side of Metro Atlanta?
Well, the first thing is Gwinnett may be jealous, but I don't think they have any reason to be jealous because they haven't fully developed their situation there. They had promised a good deal of development around that ballpark. I think they've tried to some extent, but it just hasn't happened. So they can't, in my mind, say we deserved the Atlanta Braves more than Cobb County did. Whether they move, that's a good question, David. I do know that the Braves really like the idea of having their AAA team in the same town is the big league team, just for convenience sake. I mean, we've heard a lot of times about guys getting called up from AAA, and all they do is hop in their car and they're at Turner Field pretty quickly. You know, they've got scouts in the same town, and so there's a convenience factor that the Braves love. I do think that, at least in my mind, even though both are on the north side, as you point out, there's still quite a bit of distance between where the new Braves Park will be and the Gwinnett Park. So, true, it's on the north side, but there are a heck of a lot more miles separating those two than the current Turner Field with the future Braves Stadium.
Yes. Now, the Braves kind of unrolled this, and they gave their reasons for moving. And obviously, we think we know they got a better deal from Cobb. They got, you know, twice as much public money. If there are overruns, Cobb has to pay it, whereas for the Falcons, if there's overruns, the Falcons have to pay it, not the city of Atlanta. But then they used some other things. And one was there was not good access to major roads at Turner Field. And then they talked about you know, some of the places they couldn't control, like tattoo parlors. It seemed very disingenuous. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say it. If you look at it, the stadium sits right beside 7585, and a half mile up the road is I-20 east and west. I mean, really, could you get more closely connected to major highways in Atlanta? And secondly, where are these tattoo parlors and everything else they were talking about? Because I've been down near Turner Field, and I hadn't seen them. I wasn't looking for them, but I hadn't seen them.
Well, you know, all the tats I've gotten, David, I haven't gotten one at a parlor down there. So, yeah, I'm unaware of that. And what you say is very true. If you take a step back, the location of Turner Field, given the proximity of both of those interstates, is not – there's not much to complain about there. I think it was probably more of a sort of the neighborhood situation, whether there are tattoo parlors there or not. And I think it's probably partly a perception too. But yeah, I mean that ballpark certainly is close to two major highways, and they were kind of throw it in that into their argument to make it sound a little better, but I don't put much stock in that. I mean, I think the parking issues that they brought up and the lack of development in that area is far more valid than the quote location.
Well, let me ask you a question about this, you know, development in the area. We seem, you know, you just said that in Gwinnett they've had trouble with, you know, encouraging development around this stadium that they've got there. We've certainly seen that on around the – hello?
Yes.
Yeah, Catherine, you're breaking up a little bit.
I just hit some – oh, sorry. We've certainly seen that at least on one side of the dome, the Falcons arena, mm-hmm. You know, on the north side – there's not much development. It's all, you know, pretty ragged. And then we see it at Turner Field. There's not a lot of development. Is that just a problem with these major sports arenas? I mean, I know we've got Fenway Park and the field in Chicago, and I know that in Detroit it's pretty well developed around Tiger Stadium or whatever it's called now. But, I mean, is this sort of a problem that we have? Because it sounded to me when I was reading some of the reports about Turner Field that a lot of the reason for that for this lack of development is that they need all this parking, and it's a lot more financially rewarding to keep those areas for parking, even though, you know, how many ever months of the year they're not being used. So, I mean, is this sort of a problem, and how are we – and are we confident that it's going to be solved in Cobb?
Well, I think you can have both. You can have plenty of parking, and you can have retail as well. And some ballparks don't have both. I mean, Wrigley and Fenway, they're kind of crammed in the neighborhood, so they don't have a lot of parking. There's, of course, a very available public transportation to those two parks. But you can have both. Can it happen in Cobb? I mean, I think the chances are better. I think one challenge that Atlanta has had, and it's just the nature of our city, for better or worse, is that folks in general are less inclined to go hang out downtown. I mean, I think they find going to ball games there, but in terms of spending a few hours before or after the game hanging out, there's been less of an inclination to do so. Now, were there more places to hang out around the Dome in Turner Field, that might have been different, but the fact is that they weren't. I guess trying to look on the bright side of this, I mean, one thing we may see happen with Cobb is that to beat the traffic, and probably more so on the weekends than the weekdays, but folks may decide they're going to go to you know, that area of the ballpark mid-afternoon before the traffic gets too bad, and you know, have a nice relaxing dinner and maybe hit a store or two before the game. So who knows? Maybe they don't want to solve the traffic problem totally. To get folks to get there earlier and to spend their money.
Yeah, and
then we're
another
about
comment
it.
On that. Well,
yeah,
I used to work at Fulton County, and they used to have some restaurants down there. I mean, they weren't fine dining, but they had a Taco Bell, they had a Long John Silver's, and they had a Kentucky Fried Chicken. I'm not sure if they had all those simultaneously. They had one of those combo huts that they opened sometimes, but they had those. It sat across the state from the stadium, from across Capitol and Georgia Avenue, and they had them there. The Braves didn't want anybody eating in there. Because if you
Right. Ate
your food for a regular price at Taco Bell, you weren't buying the, you know, overpriced hot dogs and warmed-up nachos with them. Let's just be honest. None of these places want you eating there. You can go see CNN Center before a Hawks or Falcons game and eat the food there, but then you're not buying the overpriced stuff in the place. So I don't know why they would want all this development outside, because they lose out.
Right, and in the letter that was published today from one of the Atlanta city people who had been involved in negotiations with the city, there was a long list of requirements from the Braves, and one of them was that no fast food franchises were to be built. This was when they were trying to negotiate to stay in Atlanta. No fast food except for one coffee place, either Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks. You know, any other restaurants had to be approved by the Braves. There was like a long list of requirements that, you know, they want development, but they don't want, like you said, David, they want people to come into the stadium to, you know, spend their money there. So I think it's a difficult balancing act, and I'm hopeful that Cobb will be able to do it. You know, I mean, hopefully a new, you know, a clean slate, a new thing, maybe they'll be able to make those negotiations work.
Well, I think what you're probably going to see if all this comes about is that, especially bars, they're going to have promotional deals with the Braves where, you know, they'll give away tickets before games, you know, might even sell some gear and so forth. So I think the Braves can profit to some extent from the existence of these places, as long as that, I guess, if folks, yeah, don't stuff themselves so much where they don't develop a hunger until the last pitch.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I know we got to get you out of here. Final question I've got, and that would be about the current Turner Field, the current location. I know the mayor said they're going to tear it down and build homes, which can be good. I mean, I'll wait and see what it looks like. But as a Georgia State alumni, knowing where the college is, knowing where the college could be not in 10 years, but maybe in 30 years. It's going to be the largest university within 10 years, but it has no real social life. What do you think the chances are they keep at least a portion of Turner Field, use it as some type of combination stadium for football, baseball, and soccer, any of your outdoor sports, and just have it as their facility, and then start to use a lot of those parking lots, because obviously they're not going to need as many parking places as the Braves do, and start building maybe some student housing that would still be close to the campus. Wouldn't that maybe be a better use of the land possibly?
Yeah, I think if they could make the dollars work for all parties. It was interesting. I was at Georgia State the other day doing a story on a football coach there, and I have a former guy I used to coach who plays baseball at Georgia State, and they were telling me that they're desperate for a place to play baseball in town. Right now they play out of town, out of the city center, their baseball game. So I think that's possible. What I think, and I know this has been floated, and I've been saying this for years, and I think it's going to happen eventually. I think it's inevitable that there's a casino in Atlanta, and I know the underground folks have been pushing for that for years, and right now it's not legally possible, but I think it's headed in slowly but surely in that direction. I can even see a racino, which is horse racing in a casino. I'm a horse racing fan, so I'd like to see that. So this may be the opportunity for that, especially with things changing politically and folks looking for a new revenue stream for the city or the state. So I would think that is a definite option, along with, as you say, the Georgia State situation. I used to teach there, and things do seem cramped there, so they may have to spread their wings a little bit.
Well, I have a comment.
Go ahead, Catherine.
I was at a meeting the other night, and one of the Fulton County commissioners was there, and he did mention the idea of having a casino at Turner Field, that he thought that was kind of inevitable. There are other ideas on the docket, but that's certainly high up there in terms of what the county commissioners are looking at. The mayor made that comment that they were going to tear it down, but in the paper the next day, everyone who would have been involved in something like that had never heard of that. That was, sort of, I think, his vision but there's been no discussion of that with Fulton County or any of the sort of development partners that would be involved in rebuilding a community, a residential community in that area. So I think that was just an idea that the mayor had while he was in front of a microphone.
Yeah, I think you're right, and there's no hurry. I mean, we still
right,
have
exactly.
three years to go, so let's get every – plausible idea on the table and see what's best.
Yes, Mike, I know we got to get you out of here, but I just thought of one more question. One person I've been surprised that hadn't had a comment, and maybe you caught it, I hadn't. Hank Aaron, I hadn't heard him say anything on this matter, and I know how big he is into bringing baseball back to urban neighborhoods and not the guys playing that are adults, but the young kids playing. It didn't seem like this kind of move would sit well with him. Has he had any comment?
The day or two after this was announced, Henry had a very vanilla, either a comment or a statement that just spoke to the history of the ballpark, and it really didn't have an opinion in there. And so it will be interesting to see what he has to say in the future. Now, I will say this, and Cobb County on a youth to teenage level is the epicenter of baseball in Metro Atlanta. It has one of the strongest youth programs, not only in the state, but in America. It's renowned for generating players. And I think that's another reason the Braves moved there. I haven't really seen this brought up yet. But there is a passion for baseball in Cobb County in terms of participation that does not exist elsewhere. So while this will not address, as you mentioned, David, Aaron's concerns about minority participation, he would recognize that the Braves are taking their product to an area where it's going to be potentially extremely well received in terms of kids and families who play going to games. Now that doesn't always translate in sports, but I think from that standpoint it makes sense. It's another reason for the Braves in their minds to justify the move.
I just want to say something here too. I think we've heard a lot about Cobb County demographics in the last week or so, and just, you know, sort of as a little correction, that part of Cobb County is not 100% white. There's a large African American communities and Latino communities. It's not as lily white as everybody seems to think it is, that part of Cobb County. So, I mean, I think there are opportunities for and it's not the wealthiest part of Cobb County either. So I think we just need to make sure that we're not drawing assumptions about that part of Cobb County the same as we draw about East Cobb or, you know, North Cobb.
Right. I think too that you know, efforts to get minority participation is pretty much metro wide. I mean, I did a story on earlier this year on Redan High School, an area in DeKalb County that has produced five or six major league players, all African American players, and in how things go down to the youth level there. So I think perhaps, David, as you point out, maybe symbolically, a move might be a bit of a blow, but realistically speaking, I'm not so sure it will be.
Yes. Well, Mike, I want to thank you again for coming on, and I think we talked about 15 minutes. It's been closer to 30. So
thank you very much, Mike.
You know, taking so much time with us.
Great. My pleasure, guys. Have a great evening.
Thanks again. You too. Yes. Well, Mike, he spent, you know, 30 minutes on this issue, which is just fascinating. I think people at water coolers this week, no matter what side they thought of it, no matter which part of Atlanta they were on, they discussed it in such detail. And it will be interesting to see what happens in two ways. One, what happens to the current Turner Field area? And two, what happens in Cobb County, as a lot of the taxpayers who are more conservative than maybe the Atlanta taxpayers start getting the details on this thing, and then maybe possibly revolt, and then later on the traffic issues if people's commutes get extended greatly. Catherine?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating couple of years to see how all this I think the next couple months will be very interesting, just, you know, see what, if there's any back and forth, if there's any, you know, any pullback to Fulton or to Atlanta, and then how, you know, how it all shakes out. I think it'd be great if we ended up with a, you know, casino or some other kind of development down, some entertainment development down where the Turner Field is now, and then, you know, a thriving Braves arena in Cobb.
Yeah. Now, if it's strictly a casino, something like Underground might be better. It'd be more in the center of the city. If it did include horse racing, you would need land, and then that becomes more viable. But then if it's, you know, I do think the Georgia State idea, because if you're looking at long-term, you know, transforming a neighborhood, you talk about a college campus that's a true, not commuter school, with a campus life. Imagine if all that comes with, or, you know, just the Georgia Tech area. But imagine all that comes with, say, University of Georgia. Imagine something like that was in that part of the city. It would transform that area like nothing.
It would transform that area, and there's lots of land there. I mean, when you look at the maps, there's been a lot of maps published over the last few days of how that neighborhood has transformed over the last 50 years, from a very consolidated residential neighborhood to pretty much barren except for the there's a lot of land where all those parking lots are and then where all the highways come together. So, you know, I think that is a good idea. It's certainly something I hope that everybody's looking at is, you know, expanding Georgia State to fill up that space.
Yeah, you just need to keep the part of the stadium need to be the you know, something to pull it that way. Well, now on to our next guest, joining us once again from Public Policy Polling, welcome Tom Jensen.
Hey, good to be with you all.
Good to have you. Last week we had Lowell Feld of Virginia, who was very knowledgeable on those Virginia races, and he gets to see polls here and there, but he doesn't get to see polls like you get to see, Tom. He doesn't get to conduct them like you do, and you did a lot of polling on Virginia. You saw other polls. What happened to Terry McAuliffe's lead?
Well, I think he probably was never up by as much as most of the polls were showing. I think it's an interesting situation where white voters who supported Ken Cuccinelli just were not answering polls and making it through likely voter screens at the same sort of rate that they ended up voting at. Because when you look at the polls that had McAuliffe up by so much more than they ended up winning by, it wasn't that they necessarily had too many black voters or too many Democrats or anything like that. But they were generally showing McAuliffe within about 10 points of Cuccinelli with white voters, when at the end of the day it looks like Cuccinelli won white voters by about 20 points. So, and this was something that you saw happening with pretty much every polling company. It's just we were getting samples that were too Democratic among white voters, and it's kind of a puzzle why that happened and how to fix it for the future.
So it wasn't a bad model. It wasn't like saying that white turnout would be, and I'm just going to throw out a number because I don't know Virginia's demographics that intimately. You know, white vote's going to be 54%, and it was 57%. It was the 57% you got was just more Democratic than white voters in Virginia are. Is that correct?
Yeah, usually when you have a situation where polls overestimate a Democrat in a race, particularly in the South, it's because you overestimated black turnout or you overestimated Latino turnout and that sort of thing. And that wasn't the case with the polls here. They were just missing a certain kind of white voter. And there are theories about whether white voters did become more engaged closer to the election because they were mad about Obamacare or something like that. But it's obviously been pretty thoroughly covered that McAuliffe's own polling did have it right. It's kind of interesting that the one polling company had it right when about 20 other polling companies had too pretty of a picture for McAuliffe. But that really is just what happened, was there was that big divide in terms of how the polls were seeing white voters.
Yes. Well, I can continue to ask you Virginia questions or move on to the next topic, but I'm going to let Catherine make that decision. Catherine, your questions for Tom.
Well, I think we've talked Virginia out. That's my opinion. So, what do you think are the most interesting numbers that you've seen in the last couple polls that you've done? Like, what has been really exciting for you to learn?
Well,
I think what we're really seeing that's kind of fascinating is there's just been two huge shifts in the national political climate over the span of the last 2 months. A month ago, if we'd been talking, we would have been talking about how great things are for Democrats. It's never looked rosier. Democrats have a great chance to win back the House and all those sorts of things sort of on the heels of everything that went on with the shutdown. And now it's just taken a complete turn in the opposite direction, and now we're getting some of the best poll numbers for Republicans that we've seen in a long time. Record low poll numbers for Obama, both nationally and in a lot of individual key states, and certainly I think hurting the prospects of some Democratic Senate candidates as his approval numbers fall. So it's kind of amazing just sort of the whiplash we're seeing in the electorate right now, where things went from being pretty middle of the road to in October all of a sudden really good for Democrats to now in November all of a sudden really good for Republicans. And I think certainly right now Republicans are feeling a little bit cocky, and Democrats I think are pretty down in the dumps, but folks just have to remember that if things could be so different now from where they were a month ago, we can see another big change like that again.
Again and again and again, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's unusual to see things this volatile, but I think it just really reflects an unhappy electorate that isn't entirely sure who it wants to blame for everything.
I think, and do you think that we can credit most of that with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare? Do you think that that is the main reason for this shift?
Yeah, I do. What's interesting is that the overall support numbers for Obamacare aren't really changing that much from where they've been over the years. Our last national poll and our last North Carolina poll found about 40% of voters support it, about 50% are opposed. That's pretty much what it's been all the way back to 2009. But it's just not an issue that's good for Democrats to be in the news, especially when things aren't going well. You know, the more people are thinking about Obamacare, the worse off Democrats are, as we certainly saw in the 2010 election. And the problem sort of on top of that is that even among voters who approve of Obamacare, there's a strong sense that the rollout has not been handled very well. On our North Carolina poll this last week, we found that even though only 50% of voters opposed Obamacare overall, about 70% of voters thought that the rollout had been handled poorly, and that was pretty much all Republicans and independents saying that. And even among Democrats, we're seeing more people think it's gone poorly than not. So certainly something that Democrats either need to get fixed or hope gets out of the news sooner than later.
Back to you, David.
Yes. Well, talking about the national polling, obviously, you know, the Health Care Act has been a big topic, but what are some of the other topics that are polling high nationally that people aren't, just, or the newsmakers aren't discussing, but the people care about?
Well, you know, two big issues that this Congress has kind of failed to address that there still is strong public support for. One in particular is comprehensive immigration reform. That's really something where we see bipartisan support most of the places that we poll about it. And I think that if there was an up or down vote in the House, you would see an immigration reform package pass, which is why I think Republican leaders are keeping it off the floor. So it'll be really interesting to see if that ever goes through, because there is certainly a strong public appetite for it. And I think this issue is very much sort of off the table in terms of the chances of anything really happening with it, but we do still see overwhelming support for expanded background checks on gun purchases. It's not that 90% plus number that you were seeing in some polling earlier this year, but we're still seeing it at about 75 to 80% everywhere. And I also think that gun issue played itself out a little bit in the Virginia governor's race. There was a fair amount of money sort of spent painting Cuccinelli as an extremist on gun issues, and I think that was part of what caused trouble for him. But, you know, politicians are certainly scared of the NRA, and I think that's going to probably keep anything from happening on that front, even though there does still continue to be a lot of public support for it.
Yes. Now, talking about some of these state polls, I know you polled on Texas in the last few weeks. And since, I guess, this is your first poll since Wendy Davis has announced for governor, I think you'd polled before she actually officially announced. How's that race looking?
Right now it's definitely looking like an uphill battle for Democrats. We found Wendy Davis down by 15 points to Greg Abbott on our most recent poll. When we had polled the weekend after her filibuster in June, she was only down by 8. But what we've found is that as she's become better known to voters across the state, her favorability numbers have actually gone in the wrong direction. A lot more people sort of developed an unfavorable opinion of her than a positive one. I think Republicans have, you know, in Texas have probably done a decent job of sort of painting her as a liberal and somebody who's, you know, not really in touch with Texas values and that kind of thing. And obviously, she's got 11 months to work on turning that back around. But right now, certainly her numbers are struggling a little bit. And one thing that was disappointing for her this week, Deborah Medina, who had gotten 20% of the vote in the Republican primary for governor in 2010, had talked about running as sort of an independent Tea Party candidate in the governor's race. We'd found in our polling that if she was in the mix, I would cut Greg Abbott's lead from 15 points down to 10, but she decided late last week not to go through with that independent campaign. So that was a little bit of a disappointment for Davis.
Okay. Well, I'll pass it back to Catherine if she has other questions on Texas races.
I saw something about John Cornyn getting a – what did I see? Was I reading something?
You're not doing well in the
Not
in
doing
primary.
Well, yeah. What's the story on Cornyn?
What his problem is, really Ted Cruz. Republicans in Texas.
God, he's got the same problem as I do.
Republicans in Texas are just so enthusiastic about Ted Cruz that it's hard for Cornyn to kind of stack up to him. And what we're finding is that a lot of Republican voters in Texas have kind of shifted towards disapproving of Cornyn because they would like to have a second Cruz. Of course, it's not like Cornyn is liked by Democrats, so he has a problem right now where his numbers are poor with Democrats, as they've always been, but they're not very good with Republicans either. The good news for Cornyn is that Texas has the earliest filing and the earliest primary of just about any state in the country. I think the Texas primary is coming up in March already, only 4 months away. So it may be too late for a really strong primary challenger to get in there and try to take him out, or else I think he would be in a lot of trouble. But certainly in a state as large as Texas, where it costs so much money to campaign, you maybe need a little bit more of a head start than this.
Well, good. I mean, they just need to clone Cruz, right? That's what they would like.
We asked Republican voters on this poll, who do you like better between your senators, Ted Cruz or John Cornyn, and Cruz wins out by over 50 points on that question.
Well, Catherine, they better hope they can clone him, because I think if they sent somebody up to Canada to find another Hispanic Canadian that is to the right of almost everybody in the American Senate, it'd be a hard, order to find another guy like Ted Cruz. He's probably literally a one of a kind.
I think so.
But they won't. Yeah. Well, talking about Texas, I guess when you always poll, you poll the presidential race, because it's never too early to have presidential polls. I noticed that Hillary Clinton actually at times in polls will put Texas in play. What did this poll find?
Yeah, we found that she was within the margin of error against several of the potential Republican candidates, only a few points behind Ted Cruz. She was actually leading Rick Perry in Texas, which is an indication of how unpopular he is, I think. Sort of looking at it more broadly, Chris Christie, Jeb Bush would do a little bit better against Hillary, but even they only up 5 or 6 points. So certainly I think some potential for Texas to be a lot closer than we're really accustomed to.
So that's going to be interesting to look at. Now, you said you polled your home state of North Carolina, and in past polls, Kay Hagan has really, fared well in her reelection battle, but this poll, it tightened a little bit. What did you find?
Yeah, we found that Kay Hagan's really sort of in toss-ups with most of her Republican opponents now. She was actually down by 1 point to Greg Brannon, the one sort of Tea Party candidate in the race, and then the other Republicans she was only up by 2 or 3 points against. It was only 3 months ago that she was up by 16 against most of these people, but her numbers really got better during the legislative session in North Carolina, where Republicans were kind of going overboard and voters were very unhappy with them, and sort of that unhappiness with Republicans was helping to pump up Hagan's numbers. Now voter anger has kind of shifted from Raleigh, which was to Hagan's benefit, to D.C., which is obviously to Hagan's detriment. And the decline in Hagan's approval numbers has tracked very closely with the decline in Barack Obama's approval numbers in North Carolina. Obama's net approval is down 10 points in the last couple of months, and Hagan's is too. And I think that probably to some extent the drop in Hagan's approval numbers is being driven by the drop in Obama's approval numbers. And, of course, we talked a little bit about the Obamacare numbers in North Carolina earlier. Certainly that's not an issue that's doing Hagan particularly any favors.
Yes. Well, Catherine, questions from you on North Carolina.
I don't have anything specific about North Carolina. I didn't read as much about that as I should have. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, the presidential – well, actually, I guess there's no gubernatorial race because y'all are with the presidential years. But Pat McCrory, he came in, you know, pretty bold and brash. And, of course, we've heard about the bathroom renovation. Did you do some approval rating numbers on Pat McCrory?
Yeah, and he continues to be pretty unpopular. Only 39% of voters approve of him, 51% disapprove. His poll numbers, his approval numbers, first dropped into negative territory in July, and they really haven't shown much recovery since that time. What has really caused him trouble is at the start of the year, right after getting elected, he had very unusually high numbers with independents, about a 2-to-1 approval. He even had approval from about a third of Democrats. He really was doing well with folks that Republicans don't usually do well with. And the legislative session just really took a toll sort of on his image as a moderate, and that caused his approval numbers to decline a fair amount. And it's going to be interesting to see if he can get them on the right track and what it would take for him to make that happen.
Yes. Well, I know you polled on the presidential race just nationwide, and obviously Hillary Clinton does quite well on the Democratic side. But on the Republican side, you know, I think there's some people that feel like, oh, well, they need to have a moderate like, you know, Chris Christie. But then the way they've been tracking so far to the right with Tea Party candidates, it really doesn't matter in a general what it looks like. It matters what it looks like on the Republican primary. What are your numbers showing?
What we found in North Carolina and in Maine, where we did polls last week, was that Chris Christie was ahead by a small margin in both states. It was wider in Maine than it was in North Carolina. What he's really benefiting from is you see that conservative vote, because conservative voters are a little bit leery of Christie. But you see them splitting their votes a lot of different ways between Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Paul Ryan and Jeb Bush. So the reason that Christie's able to lead in these polls at this point is he's racking up a huge margin with moderate Republicans. He can get something like 50% of the moderate Republican vote, and then even if he's only getting 5% with Republicans who describe themselves as very conservative, that's still good enough to get him up with that moderate support to about 20% support overall. I really think that if Chris Christie is going to be the Republican nominee in 2016, as far as the Republican primary field is concerned, for him it's the more the merrier. The more sort of right-wing candidates
right.
you have in that mix splitting the vote different ways, the better the chance is going to be that he can, you know, pull through with some smaller fraction of the vote.
Yes. We know that you're releasing soon a Mississippi poll, and I think just in the past few weeks we've realized that, you know, Thad Cochran may be vulnerable on his right, and then if he were to lose, then, you know, there's chances for the Democrats, including Travis Childers is actually looking at a run, and he was on our show back before he won his first time for Congress in that special election. Anything you can tell us on Mississippi?
Well, I haven't seen any of the results from the poll yet, but I'll just tell you what we polled about so that folks know what to look for, and it'll start coming out on Tuesday. We looked at the primary between Thad Cochran and his Tea Party challenger, State Senator Chris McDaniel. We also looked at a larger Republican primary field if Cochran was to retire. I think there's a lot of people who might run in that instance because Mississippi is certainly a state where once you get into the Senate, you have the opportunity to stick around for a long time, so people are not going to want to let this opportunity pass. But we are also looking to see how competitive some Democrats would be. I don't think there's any chance Democrats could be competitive with Cochran. The last time we did a Mississippi poll a couple years ago, he was among the top 10 most popular senators in the country. But it's possible that even in a state like Mississippi, that somebody like Chris McDaniel might be seen as too conservative. So the Democrats we tested on the poll were Congressman Childers, since he's shown interest, and we also tested the Democratic Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General Jim Hood, and then former Governor Ronnie Musgrove, who ran for the Senate in 2008. So it'll be interesting to see if any of those folks can come competitive on the Democratic side with Republican if they end up nominating somebody who's too conservative. And then we'll also have a look at Governor Phil Bryant's approval rating, which we've never looked at before. It'll be interesting to see how he's doing. And then we have even asking Mississippi State fans if they think Dan Mullen should come back as football coach next year. So we're covering all our bases.
Well, we'll look for it. Let me just ask you one last question, and then Catherine may have something. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but there was a fascinating congressional race in which the more moderate Republican candidate ran with the support of the Robertson family from Duck Dynasty fame against the establishment more conservative candidate, certainly on Obamacare, because that was the real interesting thing about this. Have you seen any polling on this thing? How did Vance McAllister, the more moderate Republican, pull this thing out in the Deep South?
Sure. Well, a couple interesting things. 61% Romney district, but in a race with two Republicans, I think McAllister de facto became the candidate who Democrats were supporting. So if you kind of assume he's getting that 40% chunk of the vote in the district that's still Democratic, then you only need about 20% of the sort of traditional Republicans in order to get over 50%, and as it turned out, he got a lot more than that. But the outcome of that election was kind of an interesting example of what happens when you have an open primary system. And frankly, I think there's an argument that's better for democracy than what we have in a lot of states. So I think that was a part of it. And then I think the other thing that hurt the establishment Republican candidate was he was very closely associated with Governor Jindal. People in Louisiana do not like Governor Jindal. Governor Jindal is one of the two or three most unpopular governors in the country. Even Republicans don't like him that much anymore. When we test the presidential field in Louisiana, Governor Jindal's at like 10%, pretty far down the list. So I think that those results were very much a repudiation of his leadership as well.
Yes. Catherine, any final questions or thoughts for Tom?
I do have a final question. So the next time you do national polling on presidential candidates, do you feel like you're going to have to include Elizabeth Warren as well as Hillary Clinton? There seems to be a lot of talk about a challenge to Hillary Clinton from Elizabeth Warren.
Sure, yeah. We have been including her, and she still doesn't get much support when Hillary Clinton's in the field. You see Hillary Clinton in the 60 to 70% range, usually about 5% of people say Elizabeth Warren. But what's been really interesting is the scenarios when you take Hillary Clinton out of the equation, and especially when you take both Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden out of the equation. 6 months ago, Joe Biden led Elizabeth Warren by 30 points when you took Hillary out. That's been cut in half since then. Biden's support's declining. Warren's support is on the rise. And then when you take both Biden and Clinton out of there, Warren is the Democratic front runner in our polls, as neither of those folks who are a little bit older than the traditional presidential candidates do end up running. We see Elizabeth Warren in first place around 20-25%, followed by Andrew Cuomo and Cory Booker. That's kind of the top three when you get Clinton and Biden out of that mix.
Yeah, because it seems like that might be changing. There's been, with the comment from former President Clinton about Obamacare and then some other, things that have been going on, it seems like that might be changing. So I'd be interested in seeing those numbers.
Sure.
Yes. Well, Tom, thanks again for coming on the show. We always love having you on with all your good polling information. We can't wait to see the Mississippi numbers. Those will be coming out Monday, Tuesday? What do you think?
Probably Tuesday and Wednesday.
Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll look for those. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Always good to have you on.
Okay. Yep, always enjoy talking to you all. Take care.
Good night.
So, and
good night,
good night to everybody else listening. Been a great show. Even.
Yeah.
We are the air.